Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Why is figuring out what to eat so hard? It's the thing we all have to do every day, multiple times a day, but it's also one of the most stressful parts of our day. And that stress begins mere moments after we wake up. Do we eat the cereal that takes a few seconds to prepare, but then we have to deal with the sugar that's definitely going to kill us? Maybe we have eggs and toast, but wasn't there just a report that eggs are actually bad for us? Or was that bread or both? Then there's the buzzwords: good fats, bad fats, fats that dropped out of college to pursue a career in pottery. There are the trendy diets, and there's bread again. Like, what's the deal with bread? Am I supposed to eat the bread? Is bread going to kill me? Is bread going to make me fat? Is it the kind of fat that dropped out of college? I wonder how that pottery career is going. And oh my God, how did I forget about supplements? Greens powders and flavored skinny waters and companies wanting to send you fistfuls of vitamins. It's all so much. It feels unnecessarily complicated and reeks of marketing teams and billion-dollar companies getting too involved in our tastes and our pocketbooks. Alicia Simpson is a registered dietitian and the executive director for Peapod Nutrition, a nonprofit dedicated to the nutritional health of Georgia families. She holds a master's degree in nutrition from Georgia State University and a PhD in public policy. For years, she worked as a professor teaching these issues to college students, but for the past several years, she has made it her mission to provide this vital information to children and families. I sat down with Alicia to have a conversation about why exactly food is so hard and whether it has to be. Here's Alicia Simpson. Alicia Simpson, welcome to Head on Fire. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I am so glad to have you because we are going into the holiday season. I can't believe it's time to say that, but like fall starts that kind of like onslaught of the holiday season starting in like October with all of the Halloween parties, and we get into Halloween and the candy. And then it's a ramp up to Thanksgiving here in the US, and then it's a ramp up to Christmas, and then it's New Year's, and it's just several months of like everybody talking about food and giving each other advice about food and having a lot of shame around food and all of that. So I wanted to have you on because, for those who don't know, could you tell people who you are, what you do, and a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I am a registered dietitian. I'm also a lactation consultant. I usually don't say the two together because then people only think about breast. And I'm like, I do all food. It's basically from birth to death, I'm a food girl. So that's all that really means. And I'm also a feeding therapist. And so like I help little ones who have picky eating issues, and I help folks with anorexia, and I help, you know, folks who are battling chronic disease. I run a nonprofit here in Atlanta called Peapod Nutrition. And our big thrust is to support people with proper evidence-based information to like live their best lives and to not have to pay $1 million for it. Because this industry is full of people who just want to take your money. So,
oh, for sure. I mean, you start looking around on social media. I mean, you know, most everybody's research these days starts on social media because it's very accessible to people. It's already in your pocket. And when you start looking at information about health and nutrition and what should I eat, it's really confusing. It's very frustrating. It can get very expensive very quickly, and it seems like there's a lot of snake oil involved. So I think just my first general question is, why is it so difficult for us to figure out what we should be eating? Like, why is food so hard?
That's such the perfect question. And the answer is simple, is that it's really not that hard, but because it's not that hard, but Americans in particular have a challenge with their relationships with food. It's really all about diet culture. It's really all about money and capitalism and what sells. And the stuff that I talk about in consult with patients is super boring. It's like, eat your fruits and vegetables. Everyone knows they're supposed to do that. Like, everyone knows you're supposed to have healthy grains and a good protein, but it's so boring. And it's much more exciting to come up with a gimmick and a plan and things where you lose weight really quickly and inevitably then gain the weight back really quickly. And then you feel awful about yourself. And then you start the cycle over again. And every time you start the cycle, you feel worse and worse and worse about yourself. And it's easier for like these predatory folks to come in and be like, well, you'll feel better if you like drink this new collagen water. You'll feel better if you go on this new diet or take this new pill. And so it's so easy to attack our self-esteem, especially in a very like beauty-driven, size-driven culture, that it's just ripe for misinformation.
So, you know, when I see people talking about nutrition, diet advice, when I see meal plans, especially online, it seems like both the science and the implementation of the science is very centered around a specific type of white person that lives in the United States and makes a certain amount of money. How did modern nutrition science, one, develop, and two, why is it so white?
Yes. It is so white because there's this ideal that like that is the pinnacle of what we should be eating, right? Like that is, we should have our grapefruit in the morning and like definitely not a little bit of sugar. We should have our cottage cheese on the side. It reminds me very much, like, I'm a kid who grew up in the 80s and 90s and everyone's mom was on Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig or Nutrisystem. Mm-hmm. I love like Strawberry Slim Fast is still like top tier. Like, it was so delicious. Pop that little top on the can.
The con of telling people a shake for breakfast, a shake for lunch, and then a sensible dinner. And I'm like, that is called an eating disorder. That's not food.
It's such an eating disorder. And
that's, yeah.
And so like, we were all raised with folks who had eating disorders, essentially. And so I think that's a big part of it. America has a struggle in general with the struggle against like dominant culture and any other culture. And through things like social media, I think a lot of us has learned, especially people of color, like, oh my gosh, most communities of color like have these same like staple things that we eat. And these are the things that are demonized, rice. And, you know, there's the viral TikTok about our woman talking about plantains and how many calories are in plantains. And like every culture stay away from, I have plantains in the fridge right now that I made last night. They are amazing. They're black and sweet and perfect. And I think that's what it comes from, is this rejection of like indigenous culture, is this rejection of anything that's not dominant culture. And that is no longer seen as like beautiful. Therefore, we don't want to eat those foods. We want to stay away from those things. And it does everyone.
Oh, it's incredible because it's like, oh, you know, on the one hand, modern American social media based diet advice is like stay away from rice because it's all carbs and starch and you shouldn't be having carbs and starch. Meanwhile, the same diet nutrition people are like, oh, let me tell you about the secrets of the blue zones and all of these Asian cultures. And
eat rice three times.
And they're just like, well, I eat rice and I eat a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I live to 130. And
it seems
my body has been snatched my whole life. Yeah. So
you see these documentaries, like they're ripped, they're going underwater. I was in Thailand and like I eat pretty healthy. I grow my own food, all of that stuff. But seriously, eating like rice, veggies, lean protein, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all of us on the trip were like, we're really healthy people, but this feels amazing. Like my body feels great. Like everything it's also hot as I'll get out. But so we're just doing all the right things for our bodies. And everyone around us is also really healthy with very little resources, very, very little resources, and yet so healthy.
I remember when I went to go visit, we went to go visit my husband's family down in Mexico a few years back. And I thought, my God, I must have gained 15 pounds in a week. And I ended up actually losing 5 pounds that week because like I ate everything. I mean, I ate so much food, and it was the best food I've ever eaten in my whole life. But like, you're also like, there's a reason why the culture's food is the way it is. I mean, mostly you're walking everywhere. You know, the cities are walkable. You're walking everywhere. You need certain foods so that you can be active throughout the day. And it's fuel for your body to go do that. And I ate a lot of rice and a lot of beans and a lot of all sorts of stuff. And I ended up losing weight somehow that week. I don't know how, but like, what I keep thinking is like, if I especially were from outside of the, you know, white patriarchal culture in the US, and I wanted to be healthy, and I look at the food that would be required to required, I'm using air quotes for anybody in an audio medium, to be healthy, I'd be looking at food that doesn't look like the food that I eat or anybody in my family eats. I mean, you know, salads, yes. All of that. Do you find that kind of diet advice, that face of diet information and nutrition advice ostracizes certain groups from certain people from cultures who don't eat this way? Does it ostracize them from thinking, oh, I can never be healthy because we don't eat like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have people who come into my office, they're referred for a variety of reasons, and they're so hesitant to come in. They'll cancel their appointments and then say they're going to come and not come, or don't fill out the forms. And they get in the office, and after we finish talking, they're like, oh, I thought you were going to take away everything. So last night I binged on all my favorite foods because I thought today you were going to take away everything. And I'll have people from like Nigeria who are like, well, I eat fufu, which is just starch. And they're like, well, I need to manage my diabetes, but I was told I can't have any carbs, and this is a staple in my diet. And like, you can still eat that. We just have to learn how to eat that, like in combination with other foods. What are the other things you like to eat? We don't like to ask questions, because questions don't sell either. So if we're like, if there's a magazine cover or a TikTok or a news article to say like, oh, well, this is how you can like make any food work from any culture. If you just eat this much and then eat this much protein, it's not as fun as eat the keto bread with like all butter and 20 slices of cheese. And it's just more fun. So, yeah.
So how do you fix that? I mean, how do you tell people like, listen, air quotes, healthy eating and balanced, you know, nutrition is for you whenever, you know, people come to you and say, oh, I there's nothing in my culture that I could eat. You know, there's nothing in my pantry that I could eat. How do you combat that?
Yes. So it takes a lot of convincing, because people are very skeptical when I'm like, yes, you can have tortillas. Yes, you can have injera. Like, I don't think that's correct. Because my friend at work lost like 50 pounds eating nothing. And I'm like, how's that going now? Are they tired? I look, are they cranky? Because I'd be really cranky. And they are. it's really about, I'll tell a very small story. And that is, when I was little, I wanted to be a therapist. And I wanted to be a psychologist. And my mom was like, don't do it. You'll have to go to school forever. Go into marketing. So I went into marketing. Hated that, ended up going into healthcare. And I joke all the time with my friends now, I'm like, I am a therapist. I don't know how this ended up, but I am the one who's saying, hey, what you love matters. And it's not like, eating is about joy. Eating is about sharing your culture. When I'm working with people who are introducing their kids to solid foods, they're obsessed with like when they can do it. And they're obsessed because they want to share their culture. They want to share their grandma's recipe or their favorite thing with their child. And that's all we're doing with food. And so to take away that very essential thing, it's kind of soul breaking. Like, I have people come in who are like, I have no joy over food. Or I'm talking to them like, well, what did you eat today? And they give me like the same foods for like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that's what they ate yesterday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they're like, well, I don't know what else to eat. Everything else is unhealthy. So I'm just going to eat chicken breast, broccoli, and a sweet potato over and over and over and over again. And I'm like, isn't that, I'm like, are you happy? I'm like, no, but I have to eat this. And I think people are surprised when I ask, are you happy? Are you happy with what you're eating? If you are not happy with what you're eating, then we need to eat something else because it needs to bring you joy. Nutritionists are obsessed with food. We love it. I love everything about it. That's why I'm canning and preserving and growing, because I love all aspects. There's food sitting next to me right now, like we're constantly eating. And I hate it that people don't have that joy when it comes to food. So that's my job.
Can you speak to combating food shame? I mean, like I said, we are about to go into the holiday season. People are going to be going to parties. People are, you know, but also when it's been a hard week.
Yeah.
And food is a comfort mechanism, is a coping mechanism for some people. I mean, I certainly, you know, when it's a hard week, when I'm stressed, I certainly like to reach to something that makes me feel good, you know, that tastes good, that reminds me of a time when I didn't feel bad.
Yeah.
But then you do end up feeling like, oh no, now I feel bloated. Now I feel full. Now tomorrow morning I'm going to have to run so much more. I'm going to have to deprive myself tomorrow. Like, how do you speak to your patients about food shame? And what do people that maybe, you know, can't access a nutritionist for whatever reason, what could they do to implement some tools in their life to combat food shame?
Yes. And the holidays are an incredibly hard time because one, there's the food shame. So you have people with their opinions about your body, about what you're eating. And they also want you to eat everything that's been made.
Everybody's shoving food at you and then also ridiculing you for eating the food.
Yes. So it's a real fun time. It's also a time where people, I'm like, why is everyone canceling? I'm like, you guys, I'm going to let you eat the food. Come on, come back. But I bring it back to self-care, which is kind of become a buzzword now. And people think of self-care as like, I went to get my nails done and I went and got my hair done and that was my self-care. And in my world, self-care is doing the basic things that you need to do to live. And oftentimes we are not doing the basics we need just to live and survive. And we're expecting our mental health and our physical health and our spiritual health to be okay without sleeping, without drinking water, and without eating food. And so for all my patients, I'm like, your mandatory is you have to eat multiple times a day. You have to. That is love to yourself. So like, whoever is saying anything, we're ditching it because you are showing love to yourself. And in the beginning, I really don't care what someone's eating three times a day. Okay, you're eating Fruit Loops three times a day. Great. I just want to build the habit. You need to build that first habit. And it's so hard to build a new habit, despite all that. It takes 2 weeks. It takes an infinite amount of time to change a habit. So start there. Give yourself grace. Give yourself love with every single bite. And then we can work on possibly like adding in some fruit with that Fruit Loops and a little piece of sausage with that Fruit Loop to like start rounding it out. And then we might switch out those Fruit Loops. How about some Honey Nut Cheerios? Like we can start moving things. But when we're already starting in a place of shame, then we're often not doing the basic things like feeding ourselves and sleeping enough and drinking water, just any water, not a gallon, just anything. And so many people aren't. So many people are not nourishing themselves, are not sleeping well, are not hydrating themselves, and expecting to be able to like live and function on this incredibly high, like American cycle of constant work and being everything for everybody. When you have nothing, you're depleted. So we start with those basics.
One of the reasons why I really like the platform that you're building out is because you don't talk about size. You don't really talk about pounds or weight loss or anything like that. What you talk about is sort of what you were hinting at earlier. Does what you're eating make you tired? Are you tired? Do you have the energy to live your life, whatever it is that your life looks like? If you work from home, do you have the energy to do that? Do you have the energy to, you know, to do the things that you want to do that make you happy? Because another group of people cross-culturally that do feel, one, there's this, again, cycle of shame, cycle of feeling ostracized, so you don't participate, so then you feel bad, are people of size, people who aren't a size two, people who, you know, might be, you know, feeling like, oh gosh, I need to drop 50 pounds, I need to drop 100 pounds, I need to drop 200 pounds. Can you speak a little bit to the ways in which this diet, this nutrition culture, or I guess I'll call it diet culture because you're speaking to more of a nutrition culture, this diet culture has given us an incorrect perception of what healthy looks like, and also speak to how nutritionists like you are helping people to kind of combat that and to find that you know, healthy at all sizes.
Yeah. I have so many people. When you were asking that question, I just like saw people in my mind of who I just hug and love, who, one, don't get care, because that's what it ultimately, shame, all of this, it just leads people to not getting care, which then leads to bigger diseases happening down the line. And it is because this monumental, even though everyone's like, love your body, like, love, we say it and there's a lot of lip service around it. But like on a day to day, when you go to the grocery store, when you go to the, you know, post office, when you, people are looking at you sideways or not treating you like a human being, and they don't know your life, they don't know your struggle. Most of the people that I work with who are in larger bodies barely eat. And they barely eat out of shame. And the barely eating, when I explain to them, barely eating is actually going to make you gain more weight because your body is scared to let go of anything. They're like, oh, well, that makes sense too. And so when I'm telling someone who has a larger body and they're trying to battle different health conditions and I'm telling them to eat more, they're like, this feels like witchcraft. I'm like, maybe, let's try it. And it always works. But it's back to that therapist aspect again, kind of, where it's about that base loving yourself. I have several of my patients who are in larger bodies, 400, 500 pounds, and they're like, I will love myself when I'm 200. I will love myself when I'm 150. And the problem is, it's going to still be you. So you have to love yourself no matter what size you are, which is why I barely ever talk about size, because you have to love yourself. We have no choice. It's not a choice thing. You have to do it. Because if you don't love yourself, then you're not going to make good choices for yourself. You're not going to treat yourself with kindness. It's going to be so much easier to fall into that shame spiral. I eat a bowl of cereal, maybe two or three, at like 11 o'clock at night in my closet, just talking to my partner. And he was like, what you doing? I was like, don't worry about it. The next morning, I was like, oh my God, that was too much. We're going to start over. It's a new day. I'm not going to exercise more. I'm not going to drink more water. It's done is done. That was delicious. It was like some organic little cute, it's not the end of the world. And we start over. We just start a new day. We don't give up. We just keep going. And the way that we treat people makes them want to stop every time they make a mistake. And that is a cultural, like, disease, really, that we are shaming people so hard that the second they make any misstep, we're like, you're done.
But I also appreciate what you were talking about earlier, how, you know, when somebody is in a larger body, they don't realize that eating more might actually be to their benefit, to their nutritional and health benefit. Do you find yourself also counseling people that, like, your particular body is, you know, your best version, your healthiest version of your body is probably not going to look like somebody else's healthiest version of their body, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I know kind of in the inverse, author friend of mine was talking on her social media about, you know, body image and the fact that she's like, you know, everybody thinks that I am this slim, healthy person I'm slim, but I'm probably the least healthy person you ever meet. I drink a bottle of wine by myself on the weekend. I eat like a goblin. I am very, very, I was in the hospital last winter for a heart condition. Like, I'm incredibly unhealthy, but I'm slim. So people give me this credit of being this, you know, I'm slim and I'm white. And so therefore I am conferred this idea of health. Whereas, gosh, some of the healthiest people that I know are in much larger bodies than mine. Yes. And they eat a lot better than I do. And they treat their bodies a whole lot better than I do. And, you know, so can you speak to that? Are you able to give folks that kind of comfort and that kind of advice as well? Like, listen, you're not gonna nutrition diet your way into a body that is then on the other side for you, then it becomes an unhealthy thing.
Yes. Yes. And that is like another reason why I don't really talk about weight is because I used to have a lot of people come in and be like, oh, this is my goal weight. My goal weight, I'm 50 now, but I want to be 150. I'm like, have you ever been 150 pounds? How do we know that that's what's right for your body? You don't know that's what your body wants to be at. Maybe your body wants to be smaller. Maybe. But if we get to a point where you're like 175 and you're fighting and you're starving, then that's not where your body wants to be. So let's listen to that. And comparisons often happen. When I get partners who are going on a health journey together and one person's like, oh, my sister or this, I see a lot with kids as well. It's like, oh, well, their cousin eats so much more and is so healthy and never sick. And my kid is like scrawny and always sick. I'm like, it could be a myriad of reasons that have nothing to do with health. So like and there's a big range too. That's another thing is that everyone thinks like there's one number. And as much as folks hate the BMI, it is a giant range. And I think like that's how we want to start thinking about health is in this spectrum. Everything's a spectrum and so is weight and so is health. And I always have folks in my office who are like, I've been working out like crazy and I'm losing inches, but the scale won't move. I'm like, so who cares about the scale? You feel amazing, don't you? They'll like show me their selfies. I'm like, yeah, I went to the Beyonce concert and I wore the outfit that I didn't think I could wear. And I'm like, so who cares what the scale says then? Because you feel amazing. You feel beautiful. You feel just alive in your body. So who cares? And everyone does have a different metabolism. There are naturally slim people. Naturally slim people are usually some of the most unhealthy people because they have this feeling of, I can do whatever. I can do whatever I want to my body and it won't matter. And those are the people who suddenly drop dead of a heart attack.
Because they've internalized that slim equals healthy. And therefore, if I continue to be slim, whatever I'm doing must be correct.
Gotta be great. Yes, gotta be great. Or, like, oh, my husband can eat whatever he wants. My brother can eat whatever they want. No, they can't actually. They have hearts. They have brains. They have organs. Like,
right. Yeah.
I wish it was possible, but 'tis not.
So. You know, speaking of eating to your body and focusing on your body and your plate and not somebody else's plate, you know, diet fads, and we see them all the time, can sometimes, oftentimes even, be based in a real need that people have. I know that for the last several years, or maybe it's not so much anymore, but I know gluten-free diets were kind of a big thing for a while. And they're an example of a particular type of diet or a way of eating that is necessary for people that have certain conditions, chronic conditions, people like that have like celiac disease. But that's not for everybody.
Right.
Not everybody has celiac disease.
That would be really—
But suddenly once it becomes a trend, then certain words start having a negative connotation in pop culture. Gluten is suddenly negative. Carbs are suddenly an evil thing. So how can the average person navigate their way around the latest fad?
Yeah.
And how can they also maybe navigate their way around figuring out whether or not, hey, maybe this could help me?
Yeah. It is a tough line between, especially if you're someone who's like struggling with health challenges and you can't quite get to the bottom of what it is. And a lot of stuff will be like gut issues. Like it's always had a bad stomach or something. And like, it could be gluten. It could be dairy. It could be you have an allergy. What's important is if you have access to healthcare, unfortunately we have to say that, but if you have access to healthcare, utilizing those resources, going to the allergist, going to the gastroenterologist. And then if you're going to, if you do not have access and you do want to do these, you know, kind of self experiments, taking things out, it's like one thing at a time. I'll see people just like, I'm taking out sugar and gluten and dairy and this. And I'm like, how do you know what worked? And now you're going to be miserable forever. Like, let's pick one and see what it is. Gluten is a huge one. And I love gluten. I have an actual bag of 3-pound bag of gluten downstairs. So
do you do a lot of baking?
I do.
Okay. Well, there you go.
It's seitan. And yes, I have every kind of flour. I have like 25 pounds. I love carbs in me.
Oh yeah.
Yes. And people are always like, wait, you eat carbs? Like, yeah. Yep. And my favorite thing is ask an athlete what they eat. Like they eat a ton of food.
Yeah. Carbs. I need energy to get through my day, and you get your energy from carbs turn into to sugar, and your body needs that.
Yeah. I'm like, how am I supposed to boom?
Yes.
Yes. And so if you're doing those self experiments, going slow, being wary of anything that's going to cost you money, because ultimately, these basic things, when it comes to food, the cost should just be the food. A lot of people are like, oh, are you anti-supplement? I'm like, well, I'm not anti-supplement if there's an issue, if you have blood work that says that there's an issue. But we rely so heavily on them in our culture. And it's because it drives dollars. It drives a market. It's a multi-billion dollar industry that really only exists in the West. And yet other cultures live just fine without all of these supplements, with just using food. And so staying away from things where you need to buy $100 worth of something, you need to sign up for a plan. The diet that has been shown to be the best diet, I think we're at 50 years now this diet has been studied, and it's always come out as number one. There's a list of ranking of the diets. The newest fad diet is always at the bottom, and this one is always at the top. So it's either going to be Mediterranean diet or the DASH diet. DASH diet is kind of complicated for the normal person, but a Mediterranean diet is just make sure most of your plate is veggies or fruit. Fruit is fine. The sugar in there is fine. Veggies or fruit. The rest is protein and carbs. That's it. It's so simple, but it's so darn boring that no one wants to do it. It's just like, this can't be right, because I've been told I need to count calories, and I've been told I need to watch my macros, and I've been told that I need to do all these other things. So the simple thing can't be right, because I got to eat for my blood type. I've got to do this. I got to do that. Like, or just eat what you like and make sure there's a lot of plants on that plate and eat until your body says, I'm good. And oftentimes it's to learning that you're good, because a lot of people don't know how to recognize within themselves hunger or satiety or fullness. And that's a challenge that comes from very early on in life and how you were fed earlier. And also learning to listen to yourself. I'm like, wait, I actually think I am full and I can save the rest of this for later and keep on enjoying this meal and not have to like stuff it all into myself right now. So there's a lot of like these little ways that aren't gimmicky, they aren't sexy, but they work. So
can I ask, could we go through maybe some of the words that are demonized and maybe why, what their job is in your diet, like what they can do for you, maybe just so that people understand that, like, oh, this, that like carbs are not evil. I don't need to. So like things like carbs and fat and sugar and yada, yada. So can I just go through like one at a time, just a few of like the big ones, and you tell me like what their job is in my diet?
Yes.
So fat. What does fat do for us?
I'm so glad you started with fat. It's my favorite one. I have a big 2-pound thing of fat and I love it. So fat is my absolute favorite because people think of fat as something that just like as a blob that's in your body, and it's active. It is living. It creates estrogen. It's a huge source of estrogen outside of ovaries. And so for those with larger bodies and they're like, oh, when I lost weight, like my breasts went down, or like, yeah, it was estrogen. It was extra circulating, but it's alive and it's there to help store in times of need. And so fat also does not, we can't control fat. We can't tell it where to go. That is genetic. Your body is already predisposed to where that fat is going to go. So you cannot control where it gains and where you lose it. I wish I could, because it's always my, my butt. And I'm like,
so yes. You mean all of those little waist slimmer trimmer things, no matter all the little, all the wraps and stuff, I can't force the fat to leave a certain part of my body.
Oh, I'll be in hot yoga and it's like 98 degrees with 70% humidity and someone's wrapped themselves up. And I'm like, I can't breathe and I am half naked. I don't know how it's possible, but all that's doing is shifting your organs. It's like old school corsets where you like saw those diagrams of like women's like stomach over here and their hearts, like you're just shifting your organs around, but you're not moving the fat. The fat is going to go where it goes, where it's going to go. And it's important. It's essential. Your heart eats, quote unquote, eats fat. So without fat, your heart does not have the nourishment it needs. Which is also why like we can have things like high cholesterol, because all fats kind of go there. So bad fat and good fat will stick and nourish or not nourish the heart.
But what does fat in our diet do for us for the food? Like I'm specifically thinking of like fat soluble vitamins and stuff that you aren't. So I know that, you know, there are people that will like eat a salad and be like, oh, but I can't have any of the dressing. And it's like, well, but then the stuff that you're eating the salad for, you're not getting.
Right.
Because you don't have any fat.
Like, I'm like, and also tasty. Unless you like, I just read Cicely Tyson's memoir. She loves a salad with no dressing. You know, if you love it, great. but yeah, important nutrients. So vitamin A, vitamin E, vitamin D, which we get from the sun, vitamin K, especially in a salad, leafy greens are really high in vitamin K, which our gut also makes. So if you have good gut health, your gut is also making vitamin K, and you do need fat. These things live in fat. And if you don't have it, where are they supposed to live? How can they be absorbed? They're just going to leave your body. And also satiety. That's where our fullness comes from, is fat. So oftentimes people are eating a meal that's just one component, and I'm like, oh, well, I didn't get full. Well, because you were just eating like just spaghetti. And if it's just spaghetti with meatballs, or not even with meatballs, just with marinara sauce, then that's not enough. You need something extra, additional to fill you up. And that will keep you from eating like a giant bowl of spaghetti if you have the salad with a really good dressing, like Caesar, like put it on there. My dressings, I'm just pouring oil like this. It's just going and going and going until the ancestors tell me to stop. And I'm like, all right, this is it. Oh, I love my fat.
Okay. I want to talk about every gay man's enemy, carbs.
Carbs.
What are carbs? Why are they demonized? What do they do for us?
Yes. So I'll start with why they're demonized. And they're demonized because we don't have good relationships with them. Like we're saying,
I know I don't.
Yes, like we can't blame the carb because we have a bad relationship with it. Like we're like, oh, rice, you're bad. It's like, no, the rice is fine. It's fine. It's just we have this relationship where it's feast or famine with them, and we often binge, and that's because our brain needs carbs for fuel. Our brain only uses sugar for fuel. And so anytime, that's why I always start up with the base of being nourished enough, because if you're not nourished enough, then your brain's going to scream at you for carbs. It does not want a roasted sweet potato when it's screaming. It wants an Oreo. Like, so that is a challenge too, because we're not nourished. So our body screams at us for things that probably don't need at that moment. But as we were talking about, like athletes, it's essential for energy. And it's stored in many places in the body. If you have too much, then it goes for storage for later as fat. But it lives in our muscle as glycogen. And that's what you need for like quick power. And it's mm-hmm. so important for mental health. When I have folks who come in who are anxious, depressed, ADHD, or on the autism spectrum, that's one of the first places I go is, are you giving your brain the basics of what it needs to be able to function? Also, with like the gluten-free fad that has popped in and everyone wants to eat gluten-free, the fiber goes down. And fibers are really essential to our gut health, which I could do a whole podcast on gut health, but also to our heart. Cholesterol will often go up when people are eating a gluten-free diet. And it's because you're not getting enough fiber, and that fiber is needed to help take bad cholesterol out of the body, basically poop it out. And you need to be able to poop it out. And so it works on literally head to toe. There's not a place where you can't not have carbs. But it's
so people are afraid of carbs because if we don't use it all, it turns into fat. Yes. But we need it to be able to move and think and do stuff.
Right.
So if you completely eliminate carbs, you're not going to have the energy to do stuff. Right. So you're going to sit.
Right.
And you're going to be like, well, the carbs... And you're like, well, I cut carbs, but I didn't lose weight because I was so tired that I just sat here.
Right.
And it's... Okay.
And then your brain eventually goes, give me the carbs. And then you feel like a failure because now you're eating the
And then
carbs.
You go eat chips. And then it's just a giant bag of chips.
Yes.
I just need a potato. Please give me a potato.
Now you're like, I'm sad because I'm eating the chips. We're like, if you had just eaten like a cup of chips before, now you wouldn't be eating the whole bag. But we've shame cycled ourselves into binge eating. So... It's so fun.
Okay, another one, and we did just a little bit talk about it because carbs turn into sugar that we use for energy, but sugar, generally speaking, is one of those that I feel like fat in the last several years has become something like, oh no, you can't have any sugar. Sugar's terrible for you. You're going to get diabetes and you're going to die. And I know and love people that are like, oh, I can't have fruit because of the sugar in the fruit.
If you are on audio, I just deflated with can't have sugar. Because I've heard people say, well, I was going to have carrots and hummus, but the carrot was so sugary.
The sugar in the carrot.
And yeah. But then I'll ask like what else they ate that day. And they're like, well, I had 3 cookies. And I was like, and we were concerned about the carrot?
Is
that the challenge of the sugar? I was like, your body's going to ask for the sugar. So why not just give it the good one?
Mm-hmm.
So sugar is one, and it is, there's a fine line with sugar because the sugar that the body really needs is the natural sugar. So sugar from fruits, that sugar that are in carbs, those are the natural sugar that we need. And then there's this added sugar, and added sugar is where things can get a little dicey, but there are really generous limits around added sugar. The U.S. has the most generous amount because we're not going to try to be like Europe. We're not there yet to have these small. We don't have
where our bread is technically categorized as cake over there because of the sugar and the bread.
Right. So I'm like, you know, that's generations from now. We'll get there. But there's still an amount of added sugar that you can have in a day and be very healthy. I love a donut. I had apple pie last night. I'm Jewish. We celebrate Rosh Hashanah. I was eating those apples and all the sweetness that you could have with it. And no guilt. Also with popcorn. It was a carb fest last night. Movie night. We're watching X-Men. Why not? And so,
which X-Men? Sorry. I'm so sorry. I just need to be a nerd for a tiny moment. Which X-Men are you talking? Which X-Men?
And so I'm walking my daughter through it. I'm going in chronological order.
Uh-huh.
So there was a debate whether the second uh-huh. would be X-Men Origins Wolverine or Days of Futures Past. So we ended up going Wolverine. Because that's what the internet said.
You did have you taken her through the original trilogy yet? from
not yet. I was like, should we start there or do you know where Beast
X-Men 2 is like the whole reason we have superhero movies anymore. I'm sorry. Anyway, I digress. A giant comic book nerd.
The studies that we did.
Okay, so I do have questions. So you said that there's like good sugar and bad sugar, and I hear that all the time. Like there's good carbs and bad carbs and good fats and bad fats, but like so many of us like don't think in the, like all we hear is like, okay, well, but also, you know, it seems like all of my favorite things have all the bad stuff in them, so I can't eat that. Like, you know, like, well, I can't have sugars or I can't have an Oreo because, well, it's got all the bad fats and the right. bad sugar and the bad something. So like, is there actually something, I mean, like calling it a bad sugar or a bad fat or a bad carb immediately like puts the word bad and carb next to each other. Yeah. And then we start internalizing that these things are bad, generally speaking.
Yeah.
But if we ate none of them, we would be eating nothing ever.
Right.
So I don't know. What is a bad carb? What is a bad fat? And are they always bad? And how do we know?
Yeah.
And what do we do about it?
So in school, a million years ago, the language we were told was, it's a sometimes food. And I still will use that language. I'm like, they're sometimes foods. They're not everyday foods, but they're sometimes foods. And when we have the sometimes foods, like make it an event. So yesterday was Rosh Hashanah. So it was a pretty big event. We had ice cream and we had apple pie. But you make it an event and you go places and you love what you're doing. We don't do it mindlessly. I think that a sugar or a carb or a fat becomes bad when it's mindless, when there's just no thought put into it. And when we are just kind of, we're trying to feed something else, but not truly our bodies. And so that's when something becomes bad. But when it's mindful, when you are doing it in community, doing it alone is automatically like, if we're just eating a pack of Oreos by ourselves, then that's probably bad, but not just because it's bad for your body, but like, where are we spiritually? Where are we mentally? Like, did we actually need community in that moment? And we reach for something else. So it's not the food that's bad. It's really the habit around it and the culture around it that makes it bad. There are things that we want to limit. So like trans fats are something that we want to limit. Trans fats are a 100% man-made fat. That is what the cream and Oreos is made out of, is trans fat, like 100% trans fat.
Oh, well, then I love trans fats.
No, you're like, trans.
Those are great. Good job, humans. Yes. Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent job.
Yes. Thanks. Solid choice, chef kiss. Yes. But that is like, that's what makes it. But there's this, you could still have some. Like, it's not a none. My dad has the most self-control of anyone I've ever known. He will literally just eat his two Oreos because that's the serving size and just like put that.
I'm sorry. Can we just go back? The serving size for Oreos is two?
It's two.
It's two individual cookies or two sleeves?
just one and two. So if you open it up and you really savor it. I know. For those of you who can't see, I think I broke
it. I'm not even going to begin to tell you how many times we've brought home a bag of double stuffed Oreos and just between the two of us just opened it up and just eaten it with a movie and a big glass of milk.
I just like the middle. I'm just like,
Just the whole thing. Just, I mean, you break those down, you add butter to it, you make a crust, you put a pie on top of it. Like, oh no, and the serving size is two.
It's two.
Oh God. That's like when I get like a drink and it's like, oh, the drink is 140 calories. And it's like, well, that's not great, but it's a sometimes, you know, I don't always drink a soda, but then you realize, oh, there's seven servings in this can.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm supposed to just take a sip.
You're like, oh, that was for me.
Oh, whoops.
Got it.
Whoops.
It can be really tricky though. And like, And things like, I'll just keep going back to our Oreo, because that's like designed for your body to love it. And that's also a challenge, because food scientists, like, the body is pretty simple. So we know how to like hack it to make you want to eat it. And an Oreo has everything. Like, your heart doesn't know that trans.
Oh, is that like that lady who hacked her body into liking broccoli? It wasn't she, like, she sniffed the chocolate and then ate the broccoli. And I'm like, I feel like that might be disordered eating. I can't comment on that because I'm not a mental health professional or a food scientist, but I just feel like that doesn't look like a healthy way to live.
How about eat the chocolate and
just eat some tea? Have some chocolate. Let's have some chocolate.
Like, please eat some chocolate.
So I think I would be remiss if I didn't talk about another kind of big hurdle that people have to enter the conversation about nutrition and diet and you know, food. The food conversation is accessibility. We touched on that earlier. But accessibility, affordability, especially here in the United States, food deserts are 100% a thing. I mean, there are places where the best you're going to be able to do is maybe some frozen vegetables, a canned something or other. You know, not everyone can access quality healthcare or take care of their own healthcare needs because of insurance or accessibility to a good doctor, a doctor who, you know, whenever you go in to see them and you talk about, well, I broke my arm, they're not, oh, well, you need to lose some weight about it. Like, you know, doctors who will actually talk to you about your body.
Yeah.
So people end up relying on social media to help figure out what's wrong with them. I know that I just feel tired all the time, and the algorithm knows that I feel tired all of the time. So it's shoving all of this, you know, buy this greens powder, buy this supplement, do this thing, yada, yada, yada. So I've talked to a number of mental health professionals for the show, for research, for a book I'm writing. Going on a journey on social media can be a good and bad thing. There are people that could see themselves for the first time on social media. You know, a lot of the models for diagnosing autism were built around men, specifically white men. So a lot of times women and people of color have been left out of those diagnostic models. And through social media, they have been able to find community and find diagnosis and find treatment and find care. And that's good. People are able to finally find treatment. They can accurately self-diagnose. However, there's another side to that where people can find their way. The algorithm can find their way to an inaccurate self-diagnosis and then start treating all of the wrong things. Yeah. And when it comes to something like your body and your health and the things that you are physically putting into your body, sometimes that can be a big problem. If you think you have one thing and you start treating that one thing without the oversight of a professional and it's the wrong thing, that could be bad. Right. You could really screw yourself up. And then there's this third issue, which I've talked to some folks for the show earlier this year about, where nothing's wrong with you, but social media wants there to be something wrong with you. So you start convincing yourself that there is something wrong with you. And then sometimes that can lead to things actually becoming wrong with you. Right. So all of that to say, one, how do you speak to people? I mean, obviously you're doing it on social media in a way to make this information accessible in a free way, but speak to accessibility, affordability, and navigating social media and that self-diagnosis web.
Yeah, that is a huge one. As I mentioned at the top, I'm from Fresno, California, which, butt of many jokes, but it is just, there's food everywhere. Like, that is, I didn't know that people didn't eat vegetables until I went to college. I was like, what? But they're in the ground. Like, you just, free. Now I live in Georgia, and in part of the research for some of the programs we're doing, kind of mapped out the poverty levels, accessibility to transportation, and there are giant, like if it's not a major city, if it's not Atlanta, if it's not Savannah, or maybe even Columbus, everything in between, the poverty rates are just through the roof. The access to transportation, like there's no walkability. There's also no access to healthcare. There's 9 counties in Georgia that have no primary care doctor. So there's access to the most basic things isn't happening. And for those people, that's where we go really down to the basics. And the basics are kind of the 3 things that I mentioned. Every meal needs to have a carb, a protein, a fruit, or a vegetable. Is that carb ramen? Cool. That carb is ramen. What's our protein? What do we have around? Are eggs accessible? If they're not, like, no. Slim Jim, jerky, it's not the healthiest thing in the world, but you know what is a lot worse? Nothing. Your body can't survive off of nothing either. We have this all or nothing culture where if it is not the most organic, highest, freshest thing, then it's not healthy. And that simply isn't true. Frozen vegetables are still healthy. Canned vegetables are still healthy.
And I do love how many chefs and nutrition scientists are saying, like, please do not overlook the nutritional value of a frozen vegetable, because oftentimes they might be more nutritionally valuable than the produce around you because they are flash frozen and like at the peak of freshness.
Yes.
And then put in there so that you can access it later. So they might actually be sometimes a better alternative than what is right in the bin next to you.
Yes. And I had someone ask me, they're like, how do I keep my vegetables fresh? How do I keep them from not going bad so quickly? And I was like, well, you got to eat them. And if you're not going to eat them, freeze them. Like, I was like, there's no magical way. I have so many freezers. I come from a freezer happy family. And so we freeze it. We're like, oh, well, didn't make it, freeze it. And frozen vegetables are often much cheaper. You can get them on sale. You can get a 10 for 10 deal, or there's steam in the bag where it's already seasoned. You can put it in the microwave, and after a really long day at work, you don't have to like roast it or figure something out. It's just done. And those are beyond okay. They are good and healthy options. And just because it doesn't say organic or doesn't have the new fancy brand on it or doesn't have a million buzzwords doesn't mean that it's not good for you. Not having it would be the thing that would hurt you, not having. So, and then, oh, I forgot the second part now of the question.
Well, just navigating trying to access information on social media and the way that that turns into a conversation about self-diagnosis and that kind of, you were talking about experimentation earlier, but yeah. There's this slippery slope when it comes to self-diagnosis and self-experimentation where, you know, people can inaccurately do it, or even in extreme circumstances. And there's been emerging research on this in the last few years as we've all been living on our phones, especially because of the pandemic, where people are saying, you know, there was some interesting studies around like Tourette's syndrome and how people were watching, especially young people were watching so many videos for so long and getting hooked in the algorithm on TikTok about it that they started giving themselves tics that they didn't have.
Yes.
And I, you know, I've talked to a number of like mental health professionals that are saying like, you can start having problems that you did not have.
Yeah.
Because you are convincing yourself that you have them. And there's really no underlying reason why you should have them other than you're convincing yourself that you should. So it becomes even more difficult to treat because it's a symptom without a disease.
Right, right. The brain is so amazing. I find it so fascinating.
I like that I say all of that and you're like, isn't that amazing?
I do. I'm like, isn't that the most cool thing though? Like your brain can just make something. Like you can make it with your mind. There's a new study. It's going on now for folks with IBS, and it is a pure placebo study. And the people know that they're on placebo. There is no control. It's just all placebo. And they're finding like within 2 weeks, people are still feeling better. Even though they know it's a placebo, it's just that ritual of taking the pill.
The ritual of taking something.
Over, and your brain just goes, oh, it's going to start working. It's going to start. So the brain is just so cool. It'll make it up. And it's like, fine, you can heal yourself or hurt yourself. But with that information, especially on social media, we also with social media have the power to Google and find out more information about the folks who are giving us this information. And being wary of personal stories, of being wary of, I had disease, I did X, Y, and Z, and I am healed. Mm-hmm. We don't know their entire medical history. We don't know. We know what they're telling us, but you don't know how they grew up, what they're exposed to, what their access to healthcare is. We just don't. And some things are truly just anomalies. I have seen so many medical anomalies. I'm like, oh my gosh, you came back from stage 4 cancer? Like, what? Like, that never happens, but it happens. But then that person will write a book and say, this is how you do it. It's like, no, that's actually just what worked for you. And sometimes it's a bit of luck. And sometimes it's a bit of science. But you really want to look for a true healthcare professional who has like gone to school for this, lives in this, works in this, and definitely don't rely on someone who just had an amazing experience and is now saying like, that's what everybody needs to do.
The sheer volume of 19-year-old white kids with more abs than brain cells who are like, well, if I can do it, you can do it. What is your excuse? And I'm like, well, one, you are 19. Two, you live at home. Three, your parents are rich. And four, you don't have to have a job so you can make being a fit social media influencer, a fitfluencer, like your job, right. And then convince people that you have this secret. And it's like, no, the secret is generational wealth and being 19.
It is wealth, like, and privilege. It works every time. It's always worth.
Yeah, it's not a secret. You look like that because you're 19 and you've been rich your whole life and you can spend 5 hours in the gym and you have access to the best foods. Like, this is not a secret.
Right. Like, even
it's like every it's like that game that you play like every single time. You're like, how did this 23-year-old pay off their house? It's like, I bet in the first paragraph, I'm going to find out that they have a rich parent.
Yes. Absolutely. Like, look at the source.
So. This 23-year-old retired early. I bet their dad's a billionaire.
If I had to have one more, I'm going to retire at 40. I'm like, listen, okay?
Listen. I'll be retired 10 years after I'm dead. Okay, real quick. I do, because we were talking about your body. We love a ritual. We love taking things and we love a hack.
Yes.
Social media is filled with them. We had the skinny tees, and which literally just make you shit your pants.
Yes.
But the big one these days is greens powders.
Oh my God.
What I want to talk about greens powders.
Okay.
And I want to talk about just the overall problem of people don't understand what dosage is. So let's talk. And also, if you can work in there somehow, a fear of the word chemicals. Oh, there's chemicals in this. That's evil. I can't eat it. It's so many chemicals. I'm like, everything is chemicals. Okay, go. Go, Alicia Simpson. Go. Yes,
and there's so many.
Tell me about greens powders.
I was like, the chemicals in this clementine, they're full of them.
So, everything is chemicals.
I'm like, are you drinking H2O?
I am. I am drinking dihydrogen monoxide, let me tell you.
Oh my God.
I know. so scary. You know the worst health advice I think I've ever seen is don't eat anything that your great grandmother wouldn't recognize as food. And I'm like, my great grandmother wouldn't recognize a taco. Are you telling me I can't eat a taco?
You have no idea what that is. Like, what are you talking about?
My great-grandmother wouldn't, I wouldn't be able to eat sushi. Like, what are you talking about? That is such stupid advice.
I mean, it's the worst.
Don't eat anything you can't pronounce. I'm like, okay, then I guess I shouldn't eat most German food. I can't pronounce my, like, this is ridiculous advice.
Yes. A charcuterie is lovely and not everyone can pronounce it, but you should still eat it.
I'm like, don't eat anything you can't pronounce. I want to hold up a bottle of Worcestershire sauce and tell me how to pronounce this correctly and then you can eat it.
Yes. For generations.
greens powder. Sorry. Yeah, what's a greens powder? Why is it everywhere and does it do anything?
Because folks struggle with vegetables. We struggle with vegetables for a variety.
It's true. We're busy. We're busy. And all of our parents just boiled broccoli to death and served us wilted, nasty broccoli.
The worst. Just waterlogged. Like, it's kind of Brussels sprouts has made this resurgence where everyone's like, I love Brussels sprouts. Well, we were making them.
Okay, but Brussels sprouts do taste it. I saw that on NPR or heard it on NPR. Brussels sprouts do taste different. And so do blueberries. Yes. They taste different than when we were kids because they bred out, like, Brussels sprouts used to have that bitter taste.
Yes.
And blueberries used to be much more sour. And yes, they selectively, and that's the other thing, people are afraid of chemicals and they're also afraid of GMO. And I'm like, okay, but you like the fact that Brussels sprouts aren't bitter and you like the fact that blueberries are sweet now. And yes, that's technically genetic modification because you're selecting which strains of these things to continue breeding.
Which is just kind of a higher natural selection.
Stop being afraid of words.
I grew a tomato watermelon because they were next to each other. So is that a, like, it's really cool.
Oh, what? Funky. Did you take photos of this?
I was afraid to eat it. It was years ago and I like cut it open. It's on some reel somewhere. But like that's.
Oh, I need to see this.
But nature did it and it's genetically modified. I'm never going to like recreate it, but I could have recreated it if I just took the seeds out and planted it again. But no one wants that. Hopefully, maybe. But with the greens powder, it really is that people don't know how to cook their vegetables. They're not getting enough, but they know that they need to get them. There's still this inherent knowledge of, I know this is important for me, but like it's impossible because our culture has told us, advertising has told us, it's impossible to get enough. And it really isn't. Like a cup of lettuce, and it doesn't have to be kale. It doesn't, like, is it green? Fantastic. It has everything you need. Eat it. It's fine. And it won't cost you $30. You can get it for like, and depending on the season, like you can get kale for $1 and a leaf.
And do you not like the way it tastes? You can add dressing to it. You could add cheese to it. You could add nuts to it. You could add other vegetables or fruits to it.
Yes, you can do whatever you want with it. You can have a broccoli salad.
Just put it in your body.
Bits and like, you can do it. It's fine. In fact, I need to make a broccoli salad. That was a good reminder. So I have all these cranberries. I need to use them. But it's so simple and it's so cheap. But cheap and simple doesn't sell. And it is one too. If you didn't grow up eating vegetables, I have so many folks that I work with, especially those who come from more economically disadvantaged communities where like string beans or green beans were the only vegetable that they were ever exposed to, if any. I had a 21-year-old who was pregnant and never had eaten a vegetable. Like no exaggeration, like just had never. And that's not their fault. That's the environment that they were raised in. And so if you're still getting used to that taste and how to cook them, then something that's like, oh, I can just put this in a smoothie or put this in my drink seems really easy, but it's also crazy expensive. And it's so much easier to try to get a little vegetable tray and figure it out. And this is another beautiful thing about social media and the internet is you can go look up a recipe of how to cook this thing and get all the ratings. And then like scroll through all of them and like, okay, they said that that's not enough salt. So I'm gonna add more. And they said, I need more oil. So I'm gonna do that. It's experimentation. It takes time. It's not quick. I think that's the challenge is that these things take time and patience and you have to learn a little bit. And marketers know that like, oh, we are in a fast paced society. If we just put it down, like here, take it or juice it or do whatever. That's more expensive than just eating it.
Well, and one of the biggest problems that I see with flashy supplements is one, they very rarely have to accurately list out their ingredients and the dosages. It's just a proprietary formula typically. So it says, oh, it's everything you need, but like, is it? I mean, you were talking earlier about all of the different vitamins that we don't normally consider because sometimes our body is supposed to make those, like vitamin K. But then you also think of like, well, does this have iron? Is this a source of the actual things that I need that would be a substitute for vegetables?
Right. Or,
and if it isn't, like, why don't they say that on the label? And normally then you test it in a lab somewhere and it's like, oh, it's celery dust. And then somebody said the word, you know, spirulina next to it. And then that's kind of all it is. But they are very expensive and they do look very green, and it seems like an easy thing, but the problem is it ends up being expensive nothing.
Right. And there's no regulation.
Like, you still have to go eat vegetables to make up for the fact that your supplement didn't actually supplement the things it was supposed to supplement.
Right. There's no study that's like, oh, if you eat these powdered greens, you're going to be healthier. It's going to cure cancer. They don't exist. And you made a really great point. In the US, there is no regulation around supplements. You can literally say anything. They can put any claim, and it does not have to be vetted, and it does not have to be true. And they have teams that know how to word things so that they can make a guarantee without making a guarantee. There are many a supplement that were energy boosting, like quote unquote energy boosting. They tested them and they had amphetamines in them. So, like, I tell my patients, please, like, if you feel like you had an instant boost of energy, be careful. They found amphetamines in these supplements. And
okay, but also, which you're like, which supplement was that?
Which was it? It was.
Which was that? No. Don't actually tell me. No. I don't need that information in my head. I don't want to know that. My intrusive thoughts will do bad things with that information. Don't tell me. No. No, but I do. I like that you bring that up, because you of course are 100% correct. Supplements, you know, all those weird fit teas, all of that. The reason why they are so ubiquitous and so easy to sell is because it seems like, I mean, it's snake oil. It seems like it is a fix all, a cure all. If you drink this, you'll be skinnier and healthier and have more energy and yada yada yada. But then it's like, why? And it's like, because we said so. But then it's they don't tell you what's in it. They don't tell you how much is in it.
Right.
They don't actually tell you what it's supposed to be doing to you.
Yes.
Which leads me into a quick conversation that I want to have with you about dosage, because this works in one of two ways. One, like we were kind of joking earlier about the fear of chemicals. One, people will hear, oh, you know, you can't eat this food because it has a cancer-causing chemical in it. And what the rest of that, you know, oh, I saw a headline, blah, 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 contains a chemical which has been linked to causes of cancer. And what people don't connect is, yeah, well, I would have to eat 1,000 of those a day, every day, for the next 5 years to get there.
Right.
But the opposite is also true, where it's like, oh, red wine is a really great example. A glass of red wine has resveratrol in it. I just happen to know this one off the top of my head. And resveratrol is linked to all of these great things for your heart and all this other stuff. Yeah, but you would also have to drink like 1,000 glasses of red wine to get enough resveratrol for it to actually do anything.
And then the rest of your body is really unhappy.
Right.
Yes.
So can we talk a little bit about dosage and the playing of like the fear of certain kinds of chemicals, and then the halo effect around other chemicals, and the fact that dosage is the missing component in those conversations?
Big time. So we were talking about kind of like what's naturally in a food. So arsenic is one that's come up a lot. Like, well, it's in rice. There's also
arsenic's a big one. It's like, oh, that has arsenic in it. I'm like, do you have any idea how much you have to eat?
I know you have to eat so much. But all plants, all living things have to have something to protect themselves from being eaten into extinction. And so, yes, you would literally have to eat a field of rice every single day. You'd have to try to put it extinct. It would make you extinct. But it'd be like, it's this game, right? So like apple seeds, like if you have a dog, you look up, can my dog eat apples? You'll see, oh, they can eat the apple, but not the seed, because the seed has cyanide. Well, that's to protect the future of that apple. You can eat the apple all day, but it just wants to protect its seed. That's all. It just wants to ensure that it can survive. So every plant has that, and you'd have to eat so, and even if you gave your dog the seed, please don't give your dog the seed, but if you did, they probably would be okay. Like they're not eating a ton, but we're just taking the precautions. And so that's really important to remember, that it exists in everything. The challenge is when we get to synthetics. So when we things like supplements again. So iron supplements are a big one where people will just pop iron supplements. They're like, I need energy. Do we get down to why you need energy? Like, have you been sleeping? What's going on? Are you stressed? Is there another reason? But iron is incredibly beneficial to the body. You must have it, but you can easily have too much. And it becomes what we call a pro-oxidant. So everyone knows about antioxidants, like they kill cancer, they kill all the bad things, the free radicals, and pro-oxidants do the opposite. And iron is one where it is helpful until you do too much. And too much is very hard to do from food and very easy to do in supplements. Mm. And a lot of our food is supplemented. So like most cereals that have like 100% of all the things, if you look on the ingredients, it's just all supplements. It's all added vitamins. And so that is like a multivitamin, and you're taking your multi and you're taking an extra. It's too much. And there are study upon study upon study of how harmful like constantly taking these supplements are. We have these great now like generations long studies where they followed hundreds of thousands of people. I'm like, oh, this was a problem. Turns out getting too much of these little trace minerals that are super easy to get, like copper and selenium, if you're constantly supplementing, that's actually dangerous. But no one's thinking about selenium. I guarantee no one's like, I wonder how much copper I'm getting. About that, like everyone's thinking about magnesium or calcium, but they don't think about these little things. And they can be incredibly harmful. Vitamin C is another one where very, very helpful, very wonderful for the body. It's supplemental. We're taking these big supplemental doses. It can affect hormone function. It can start to
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that one up, because we are heading into cold and flu season and everybody just like front loads so much vitamin C.
Vitamin C. Just eat an orange.
I mean, there's a lot of people. They'll go get that Airborne and they pop that, and then they pop a multivitamin, and then they have to do all this other immunity boosting tea. And it's like, do you have any idea how much stuff you are just shoving into your body?
And it doesn't even work that way. Like vitamin C doesn't even work that way in the body. It helps with DNA synthesis and repair. So it on that level is helping with immunity because it helps make cells. But like, it's great for skin because it does help with skin. And if you need to heal, like after surgery, then there's an amount that you would take for that. But these mega doses that people are taking can be really harmful and can be hormone disruptors. So we're all worried about hormone disruptors and everything else, but it's like the supplement you're taking is...
Yeah, immunity boosting is, since we brought it up, it is another kind of one of those buzzwords that I don't think people don't realize what it actually means. Like it's not like a shield on a spaceship that is somehow like keeping the disease out of your body or letting it not harm you. Like that's not, like your body doesn't have like you have an immune system, but like it's not doing the thing that you think it's doing. Like it's not.
And once again, you can just put you could put immune booster on an Oreo, and that would be legal and okay. So it really doesn't mean anything.
Could you speak to real quick? Like what is, if I have immunity boosting on something, or if I'm taking a supplement to boost my immunity going into cold and flu, what am I actually taking and what is it actually doing?
So that's the fun part, is we don't know what you're actually taking.
So that's okay. Let's say that I'm taking a multivitamin that claims to improve, or a tea, like those immunity boosting teas.
A lot of those are usually just going to be vitamin C. Elderberry has popped up quite a bit. I'm an old school hippie. And so I have old elderberry bushes. I grow it. I dry it. I make it myself. Elderberry has...
My mother-in-law is a big elderberry person.
I'm an old school hippie. I love some elderberry. But it's also not something that should be taken every single day. Your body needs a rest. Like these things are not...
Tastes good.
Oh my God, it tastes so good.
It tastes so good. Elderberry tastes so good.
I make my own little elderberry gummies and everything.
so good.
They're so yum. But they're also not like a cure-all. Like they're, because of COVID, there was have been studies done and they're like, I mean, it's not going to, you may get COVID, you may not. You may get the flu, you may not. It's just as good as anything else as washing your hands, going outside, getting sunlight, like having a great conversation with your friends. Those things make a big difference on how your body functions. We talked about how powerful the brain is. Mm-hmm. And happiness, joy, also is huge for your immunity. It's huge for your health. And they kind of have it in a bottle. I mean, I have a little store-bought serotonin, but I still need to go outside. Like, so. And so it's usually you're always going to see vitamin C. You're going to start seeing elderberry. Zinc has been one that I've seen popping up.
And zinc's a big one, yeah.
Yes. And zinc, the studies on zinc are actually really old and they're good data. There was mostly on cold and flu, but it was zinc that not that you're ingesting, but zinc lozenges. It's something mm-hmm. about zinc actually physically being like in your nasal passage, on your throat, in your mouth before you get sick. So it's a preventative, but once you're sick, it's not going to now like make you heal faster or do anything like that. It's study is only zinc lozenges to prevent, and it's still not 100%. Nothing exists that's 100%. And so that's really important to remember. Like, yeah, elderberry is good for you. Zinc lozenges are great for you. I mean, orange juice has vitamin C. That's good. You need it overall, but like you should just have that because that's what you eat. Not because we're looking to like do something or boost your immunity. Because how do you know your immunity is bad? Like, what are the chances your immunity is awful? Why are you immunocompromised? If you're immunocompromised, you should be going to the doctor. So yeah, who says your immunity is bad?
Well, Alicia Simpson, I could and probably would talk to you all day because, I have a million questions. But if people would like to reach out to you on social media to see the kinds of videos and content that you put out for free that people can access, where can people do that?
So on both TikTok and Instagram, I'm at the ADHD Nutritionist. There's a period between the ADHD and nutritionist, or on Instagram at Peapod Nutrition, as well as my nonprofit. And I will always give evidence-based information for free because I don't believe this information should be gatekept. So it's for you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for being here. This has been a joy.
Yay. Yay, yay, yay. Likewise. And I'm going to eat this sugary clementine that I've been looking at and playing this whole time. Oh, yes.
And that is going to do it for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Alicia Simpson. You can find more about Alicia on her social media platforms, the ADHD Nutritionist, and of course on the various websites for Peapod Nutrition. Remember, if you like this show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Consider sharing it with your friends on social media. You could also like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And while you're there, consider leaving a review. Reviews help recommend the show to other listeners just like you. If you hate the ads at the beginning and end of each episode, consider joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive early access to audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server where you can chat with me and we can, you know, help recommend guests for the show, and you can help decide the question list to ask them and all sorts of fun stuff. You can sign up at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Or if you'd like, you can connect with me on social media. I am on TikTok and Instagram and Threads and Blue Sky, and I'm sure there's other things. Everywhere at Head on Fire Pod. If you want to email the show, I do have an email address. It is contact@headonfirepod.com. Thank you all so much for tuning in and downloading the show. Thanks so much for continuing to stream and support and sharing the show with your friends on social media. And happy October! It is the most wonderful time of year, and we actually have lots of episodes this month, so it's a really exciting time. Halloween actually happens like on a day that the show is supposed to be released, so I'm going to try to figure out something really cool to do with that because it is my favorite day of the year. Anyways, I'm going to go, but before I do, please remember to never stop seeking illumination. Like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.